From the Financial Times in London, I'm Shona Jenkins and this is FT News. Britain's plan for leaving the European Union is being tested in Parliament this week, with several key votes that could radically alter the outlook for the next phase of the negotiations. Theresa May, the Prime Minister, is trying to overturn 15 amendments to her EU withdrawal bill. Of these, the most significant is one that says MPs should have a meaningful vote on whatever she negotiates. Here with me in the studio to explain why this is important is our public policy editor, James Blitz. James, can you first outline for us the main amendments that will be voted on this week and their chances of survival?
Yes, there are quite a number. In fact, there are 14. You said 15, but in fact, one of them has been accepted by the government. So we're down to 14, which the government has to overturn. All these were amendments that were passed by the House of Lords when it was looking at the EU withdrawal bill, which is the bill which is going to give legal effect to Brexit in the UK. And these 14 amendments, there were 15 then, that were passed by the House of Lords, really did a lot of psychological damage to the government. There was a sense that Brexit was being derailed and so on. Some of them deal with the question of whether the UK should stay in a customs union. One of them deals with the question of whether the UK should be in the European Economic Area, which is the kind of Norway really close to the EU option, which Mrs. May has clearly rejected. One of them wants to strike out the date, 29th of March 2019, as the date when we have to leave. One of them wants to keep the UK in the European Court of Human Rights. So there's lots of different issues, and there is this meaningful vote one as well, which is where there's a lot of focus.
So what exactly does the meaningful vote amendment specify, and why is it the one that the government may struggle to overturn?
Well, I have to take a step back here. Mrs. May is, this autumn, almost certainly going to come back from Brussels with some kind of deal. And we've known for some time that Parliament, and particularly the House of Commons, is going to be given the right to vote on that deal. But a lot of MPs who are critical of Brexit have said, well, if we decide to vote against the deal that she's brought back, we really don't have much of a choice, because what's then going to happen is that the government might say, well, OK, there's going to be no deal at all, and so we're going to leave the EU in a really messy, horrible Brexit, which is going to do lots of damage to the UK and some of the other European economies. So it's impossible to vote against the deal if we don't like the terms she's come back with. So what this amendment does, which was brought by Viscount Hailsham, a former Conservative cabinet minister in the House of Lords, what it does is it says a number of things. It expresses clearly the principle that whatever agreement there is, Parliament has to vote on. It says Mrs. May has to have that vote by the 30th of November 2018. It's important to put in that date, say MPs, because without that date, the government might bring this vote right on the eve of the moment we have to leave. And so there's no effective choice for MPs. But here the vote will happen at the very least 4 months before we leave. And then it also says that if Parliament decides to vote against the deal that she has brought back, then Parliament will decide what happens next. And that gives Parliament an enormous sway over what can happen. It could say, go back to Brussels and renegotiate. It could say, go back and renegotiate a deal that keeps us in the single market and the customs union. And it is also possible that Parliament could say, we should have a second referendum. And for those that want a second referendum, it's quite important that that decision will have been taken at least 4 months before the time we have to leave, because that's a big enough window with which to go back to the voters and have a plebiscite.
Out of the Conservative Party, how many rebels are there and how many would be required to defeat the government on this vote?
Well, the government has a working majority of around 12, I think, 12 to 14. So if seven Conservatives decided to vote against the government, then the government could lose. However, there are also quite a number of Labour MPs who are very pro-Brexit, who might vote with the government. So really, to defeat this or any other amendment, you need to have something like 12, 14, 16 Conservative MPs voting against the government. Whether that is going to happen is unclear. As ever with these things, it's a bit dangerous to predict at this moment.
What arguments is the government using to try to persuade rebels to vote against the amendment?
Well, the government's doing two things, basically. First of all, it's put down an amendment of its own. And that amendment says, OK, we recognise this issue about what will happen if we lose the vote. We will make a statement within 28 days of losing the vote on our position. But that doesn't seem a very robust response, frankly, because in the end they could just make a statement saying, well, we'll have no deal. So it doesn't really change anything. The deeper argument the government makes is that this really does shift power from the executive to Parliament on a major issue of foreign and economic policy to a degree that really doesn't have a lot of precedent in the UK.
What would happen if the meaningful vote amendment survived?
If it were passed by the House of Commons, first of all, it would be a very significant blow to Mrs. May. One of the things that Mrs. May wants to do when she comes to the Commons in October is basically say, look, here's my deal. It's not going to be a great deal, let's be honest. If this Hailsham amendment is passed, it significantly undermines her ability to get this deal through the House of Commons. I think she will survive, but things will be more difficult if she loses.
Now, if all the amendments are defeated, is that plain sailing from now on for the government?
Not at all. This is a huge domestic battle happening in the House of Commons. The major question now is whether Mrs. May can possibly get this idea of what is called an all-United Kingdom backstop through the European Union, whether she can get the European Union to accept that. It's difficult to explain the backstop, but if you like, it is basically the kind of default trading relationship we would want to have with the EU, but it would basically mean the UK remaining for a number of years in the customs union with very privileged access to the single market. That seems to be where she's going at the moment, but there are enormous doubts in Brussels about whether they will accept it. In fact, frankly, the messaging is they won't accept it. And so, as far as the overall negotiation is concerned, we just still don't know for sure whether Mrs. May is going to get to October with a viable deal which is acceptable to all sides. The chances of everything collapsing, I'm afraid, are still there, are still existent. And so this is just one more chapter, I'm afraid, in the long and tortuous passage of Brexit through the Commons, through Brussels, and so on.
Well, thank you for that, James. Don't forget, you can follow the latest news on Brexit at FT.com or sign up to our daily Brexit briefing at FT.com/newsletters.
The latest episode of The Next Five podcast is out now, and it's all about AI and creativity. I speak to Doug Eck, Senior Research Director at Google DeepMind.
Creativity is part and parcel of humanity.
YouTube creator Danny Vidari.
AI can give us humans new ideas.
And Neil Maiden, Professor of Digital Creativity at City University London.
AI creates a lot of opportunities. I think it's a great leveler.
Listen to the full episode of The Next Five wherever you get your podcasts. Enjoy.
The latest episode of The Next Five podcast is all about health prevention and vaccines. I speak to Kate Hashey at GSK.
For every dollar invested in improving health, there's an economic return of $2 to $4.
Murray Aitken at IQVIA Institute for Human Data Science.
The benefits of adult vaccination are compelling.
And David Sinclair at the International Longevity Centre.
Preventable conditions amongst those aged 50 to 64 in the UK cost $27 billion a year.
Listen to the full episode of The Next Five wherever you get your podcasts.